And now for another episode, Heard It Through the Rose Vine, with your host, the creator of Black Rose Writing, Raygun Brody.
Greetings and salutations. This is Raygun Brody, the host of Heard It Through the Rose Vine, signing on for another episode. And yes, we are still here. I've got a few announcements to make. Won't take long, and then we will get right to a wonderful interview with award-winning author Pamela Taylor, the author of The Second Son Chronicles, which is one of our, you know, historical best-selling fiction. So first off, I wanted to announce the Kara Akterberg, the author of Blind Turn, won the Maxi Awards Book of the Year, which is really exciting. She's got a really, really great book. So check out Blind Turn if you get a chance. Congrats. And then I wanted to go over our last 90 days. We just kind of been sharing it. Thought it would be fun to kind of go over our top 10 Kindle Unlimited most pages read. So if you're a Kindle Unlimited subscriber on Amazon, you should check out at least one of these books, if not all of them. But the top 10 list right now is The Five Wishes of Mr. Murray McBride by Joe Seipel, The Final Wish of Mr. Murray McBride by Joe Seipel, The Wise Ass by Tom McCaffrey, Cold Heart, Kimberly Tilly, True Crime at Its Best, Turn of the Century True Crime, My Dad and My Dog, Rebecca Warner, Reality and Chaos by Monique Kelly, Special Access by Mark Hewitt, which is book one of the Duncan Hunter thriller series. A lot of those books do very well on Kindle Limited. Number eight is the Maxi Awards Book of the Year, Kara Sue Akterberg's Blind Turn. Number nine is Joe Seipel making another appearance on the list with The Town of No Roads. And number 10 is Dollhouse by John Hunt, your kidnapping thriller horror book. So that's our top on KU. And then if you are listening to this podcast today, which is May 21st, 2021, or before May 24th, 2021, we have a few box sets that are having a very large promotion. Most of them are over, you know, 67% off. It's a limited time deal, and so you don't, if you're a fan of box sets or you want to start a new author and get more than one book, this is a great opportunity on your Kindle. Duncan Hunter Thrillers by Mark Hewitt, the Like Souls, Julie Madigan thriller series by Val Conrad is also available as a box set for $2.99. In the U.S. and U.K., they're discounted. Pamela Taylor's Second Son Chronicles, Bill Percy's Monastery Valley series, Police Procedural, Women's Sleuth. And then we also have four box sets at $1.99, and that is the Levy District 3, which is a historical mystery by John Sturgeon. Three of those books. It got a box set of three books for the Simon Grave mystery series by Lynn Boswell. Some general humor, some good mystery in there. We also have some time travel romance. And that is Sharon Middleton's McCarran's Corner series. And then last, Hannah Goodman's Maddie Chronicles, which is teen and YA. All of those box sets are on sale for a few more days, so get those while you can, if you're, you know, interested in getting multiple books, three, four books for a couple bucks. Subscribe to the Rose Vine, take the survey, get a chance to win a Kindle Paperwhite. We will be giving away another one very soon. And we'll get right to our guest interview today.
Our guest today is Pamela Taylor.
being a fan of historical fiction novels herself, it was probably predictable that's where Pamela would go for her first foray into writing fiction. She loves giving readers a chance to step into a world that's very different from their daily lives. She shares her home with two Pembroke Welsh corgis who like to remind her that a dog walk is a perfect break in the middle of a day of writing. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
I am delighted to be here, Reagan.
I'm also excited. I like I do with most of our guests, I did a little research, little refresher. And I'm not sure if you know this, but I attended the University of North Texas my freshman year of college. So I'm pretty familiar with your area.
I didn't know. That's very cool. You'll have to get back up here sometime and maybe we can visit once this pandemic is over.
I will. I'll have to let you know. We didn't go, obviously, pandemic-wise, and we've kind of waited for our kids to get a little older again. But we usually go to like the Texas OU weekend in Dallas. So I'll have to let you know our schedule around that time as well. That would be a good time to connect.
Sounds fun.
And David King lives in Princeton, Texas, so that's not too far either.
No, what? We could have a whole Black Rose writing reunion.
Yeah, we could. If you get really mad at Dave, like on your covers, you could just drive over to his house and show him, like, this is what I want.
Oh, that might not be a good idea. I'd rather stay on his good side.
Yeah, that's probably not a good way to get Dave to do, you know, to do extra work or you know, go the extra mile for you as an author.
Oh gosh, he always does such wonderful covers. I can't imagine having any problem working with him. I've just been delighted with my covers.
That's always wonderful to hear. So we've got I just got a new synopsis, an ad text from Best Page Ford, which is Brian Cohen's company, for Second Son. So I updated your synopsis, so you should be able to see on Second Son, and I think it's updated already on Kindle. And we've updated some of our ads, and so we'll be testing for the next month or so just to see, fingers crossed, we feel like there's a good chance that we can, maybe every, instead of having 10 people click and then one person buy, maybe we can get that number up to one person buy every 7 or 8 clicks or something like that. So that'll be neat to check on and see how much that description really matters or not.
I'm really excited about hearing the results on that because that's something that I've always been curious about as to just how much people who are just browsing are influenced by what's there.
Right. I don't like the synopsis and your book description. It is important, and we haven't always put a lot of weight in editing them or changing them a lot to try to just, target more effectively. But I do know one of the things we do focus on with our metadata and keywords is, when we're running ads, is if your ad text is on, if you're using ad text on Amazon or Facebook or wherever, it really does, having it synchronized with your product page can be very important. And you think of any product you buy, people do not like to be misled or not know the accuracy of what they're trying to click on. So if you're seeing an ad for a t-shirt and you click on it and it takes you and it's trying to, give you information about something else, that's an immediate usually turn off, and you're not going to ever, gain a fan that way.
No kidding. Everybody looks at that as bait and switch, and they immediately think used car salesman.
Right. And so that's the same applies, that's something we try to be consistent with, that, if your Facebook ad text is talking about a book that, one thing, like a hardcore romance, and then you click on it and you're like, oh, it's like a military book and it's got maybe like one romantic scene in it, then readers don't, they're not going to buy the book. They're just going to click on it because they're excited, and then you're wasting your money. And so, we're trying to make sure that Second Son and the whole series is displaying, like, okay, this is what the book is about exactly. And so we want readers who want to read about that, when they click on it, now the product page is showing again, this is exactly what they were looking for. And so that, you know, that's where it works the best.
You know, I've really been impressed and fascinated by watching how you are going through this whole process of really upping your game on the marketing and everything. I'm seeing the results in sales, and I hope all your other authors are as well, because it's just really been impressive as you've really tried to drive sales based on the not only good marketing principles, but also the way Amazon does business. I think that's really wonderful. It's really helpful for your authors.
It is. And that's what we, you know, that's another thing that you want to be, you've got to have a way with modern publishing and the ease of being able to publish books is, you know, you've got to separate yourself, not just as a publisher versus other publishers, but also as a publisher versus self-publishing. You know,
yeah. It's anybody can put something out there now, and getting found is the hard part.
Yeah. And if we can market our books and, you know, showcase, like, look at, you know, this is Pamela Taylor's book. Look at, you know, Joe Seipel, look at some of our author's books and see, like, this is what, you know, this is what we're doing. And you know, that'll help us continue to get really good submissions, which I feel like last year was, or I should say this year upcoming, because we've got our calendar full, but I feel like all the titles upcoming for this year is by far our strongest, you know, in terms of how good a book is. I feel like we have more hits than misses than ever. So that's a really exciting thing.
That is.
So what are you currently reading?
So I just finished reading, I'm a little bit behind on this, but I just finished reading a book called The Chocolate Maker's Wife by an Australian novelist, Karen Brooks. It's historical fiction, as you might guess, but I actually learned some things, some absolutely fascinating things about how chocolate came from the New World, and how Europeans then learned what to do with it.
That is interesting, tied in. So let's talk a little bit about what, you know, your Second Son Chronicles. You know, what were a few of the more curious details you learned in doing, you know, historically accurate research for this series?
Well, there are just amazing things you can turn up. One of the fascinating ones is I had to come up with some way that my main character could forage for things to eat when he was on his own trying to figure out a way back home. I mean, I'm trying really hard not to put any spoilers in here. So one
right.
of the things I discovered is that people can actually eat acorns. And now, to eat the acorns, you would want to be sure that they had been soaked in water for a while to leach some of the tannins out of them. But my gosh, if you picked up an acorn off the ground in January, it had been through all the rains of the autumn and maybe even some snowstorms, and so it would have been perfectly edible for a human being. And in the process of figuring that out, I discovered that you can actually buy acorn oil today. It's was used by Native Americans centuries ago for medicinal purposes, and now people buy it more to use in cooking or in making salad dressings. Now, the stuff is expensive. It's about four times the price of really good quality extra virgin olive oil, so you don't use it lightly, but who knew? I've got oak trees in my backyard. I suppose I could go in business if I wanted to.
Those are extremely interesting details to me, because I really appreciate and love not just novels or books in general, but movies that, you know, you can't always show that time wise, and it's hard to always cover that. But I'm not a fan of whenever, you know, you have like an action adventure and like the main character, like he never sleeps and he never eats and he never goes to the restroom and none of these things. And it's like, you can't, they gotta factor in somewhere. There's gotta be a time where, you know, your body can go, like, I understand you might be able to go 48 to 72 hours, but after that, you've got to sleep. There's nobody in the world that can go without sleeping, and you've got to eat, and you've got to keep your, you know, energy up by having, you know, the right amount of food and, you know, the right kind of food. And so when you add things like that to your story, it really does help make it authentic and real.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Reagan, and that's why I take the time to do it. I also found this fascinating little book created by an English professor and some of his master's students at Oxford University. They were studying Middle English and how to read it and how to translate it and so on. And they pulled some text together and called it Revolting Remedies from the Middle Ages. And so it's a whole bunch of just their efforts at translating what medicine was like in the Middle Ages. And some of them are truly revolting. Try this one on your teenagers, for example. For a zitty face, take urine 8 days old and heat it over the fire. Wash your face with it morning and night. Now, I'm pretty sure today's teenagers wouldn't go for that.
Right.
That one didn't make it into a book, but there's some other absolutely fascinating and revolting things in here. And it was a fun book to read, just looking for things that might be appropriate for including as a detail in a story sometime.
So how do you make a time as far back as the 14th century? You know, we kind of touched on this in terms of feeling authentic to readers. Can you share a little bit more, some of the details or the language and things like that?
Language is really important, Reagan. Writing first drafts, of course, you just put things down on the page and keep going. But one of the things I did in an early draft of the second volume of the Chronicles is I had made reference to a character going off half-cocked. And then when I was going back and doing revisions, I'm like, can't say this because pistols and rifles didn't exist in the 14th century. So, or at least they weren't very common. Gunpowder was only beginning to come into use at the time. People were still using bows and arrows and strange weapons, crossbows, things like that, that were more medieval. Spears, broadswords, flails, axes, all those sorts of things were part of how warfare was waged. And so I couldn't use an expression to describe somebody going off half-cocked. So I had to figure out what language I could use there. Well, another example was I had a character who had a bee in his bonnet. And so I started digging around in when did that phrase come into use in the language? And I discovered that was not until, 17th or 18th century, I've forgotten exactly which, but it's certainly much later than mine. So now we have to go figure out what that character can have. Discovered that bees in his head was the expression used at the time. Very interesting description of words for bread. You'd be surprised how many different kinds of bread there were, even in the Middle Ages. We walk into a grocery store today and we see the bread aisle, and there's whole grain and 15 grain and 7 grain and oat bread and potato bread and rainbow bread, and, you know, you name it. Well, there actually were a lot of different kinds of bread in that time. And you have to pay attention to whether or not the person eating the bread is of the upper classes, of the aristocracy, in which case they might eat bread with flour that's been sifted several times to get all the stones from grinding out of it, so the aristocrats didn't crack their teeth. But if you're talking about someone who is much farther down on the economic scale, a peasant, for example, they might eat something called horse bread. And horse bread is made with ground up beans for most of the flour and very little wheat flour as we know it today in the bread. You discover things like the word wagon didn't actually come into use in English until the 1500s. So that's a little bit late for the period of the Chronicles. And the word that was actually used at the time of the Chronicles was wain, W-A-I-N. Some people may have heard of a hay wain, which is, you know, just a wagon for hauling hay. And when you get to a point like that, then you have a decision to make. Because if I just use the word wain in my text, people are going to have to run to the dictionary to find out what the heck it is. As an author, I have a choice. I can either let them run to the dictionary, I can write a lot of narrative that really describes what a wain is. But sometimes when you do that, it's a distraction from the story. And I didn't want to distract readers from the story itself. So in this particular case, I said, okay, let's not be 100% historically accurate. Let's use a term that's familiar to people. And it came into the written language not too long after my story, so it was probably used in spoken English before then. So I'm going to use the modern term on that one. So there are a lot of decisions like that that you make when you're trying to be historically accurate with your language. It's to me, as an author, as a writer, as a wordsmith, that part is really absolutely fascinating to try to make sure we get that right.
Yeah, I agree. I would have probably gone with the wain because for two reasons. One is I really like it when, I feel like as a reader in everything in life, you shouldn't be lazy. So if you don't know something, figure it out. And it's not the author's job to always, you know, to like, you don't have to put a footnote to say what every word or everything is. I mean, and I think even more so today, because if you're reading, obviously, like on a Kindle or electronic device, you can highlight the word and it'll tell you with a dictionary. Or, you know, if you're reading with a real book, you've got the internet at you know, right there for you. So, you know, we're reading in like the 50s and 60s and 70s. You would actually probably have to go research and figure that out. Nowadays, you have the answer immediately. So, I think authors just, you know, stay authentic and write it. And if the reader, you know, it's their job to figure it out. That's how I feel.
Well, you know, I actually followed that path with the names of some of the bread. The really fine bread that the aristocrats eat was called pendemain. And I actually just put that right in there and put a bit of explanation in my author's notes, not a lot, but But let the reader learn it.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we're talking about research, and you know, sometimes research can, you know, sound like a word that's not exciting to readers or to writers. Do you have ways to make it more fun?
Oh, go to the places where your story's set. Walk those places. And this is really, for me, a lot of fun. Because I'm just so into the historical aspects of things. But the same could be said for people who are writing most genres, and I say most genres because fantasy and sci-fi, you can't really go live in another world very easily. But for me, it's a matter of going places that are very old, walking in places that people walked 600 years ago. There were actual people there, and they breathed this air, and they walked on these stones. And it just, I call it research by osmosis. And you just take in so much if you just go there, visit the places, see what it would have been like in those times. There are some things that, and of course, take a lot of pictures to remind yourself when you come home and you start doing your descriptions. You've got all these photos that you can go back to and look for the detail. And in fact, one of the things I'm doing on my website and my Facebook and Instagram presence is I'm using the idea of Throwback Thursday as a way to go back way back to the 14th century. And I've got a lot of pictures that I've taken of places and artifacts from that time. And I'm tying those in with the books and posting those pictures. One of the things I have out there right now is a picture of some 14th century spice chests. At the time, of course, spices were just highly prized and very expensive. And these were little wooden chests with a hasp and a lock on them so that the spices in the kitchen could be locked up. And only the head cook or whoever had the key could actually provide access to them so that they didn't get wasted. So I'm actually taking advantage of much of the research experience to actually try to help promote the series.
So you mentioned, you know, one of our phone calls that you're an animal lover. Does this figure into your stories?
Yeah. And I think I can say this without any spoilers. There is a royal kennel. And in fact, I know I can say this without any spoilers because I've got some pictures of what might have been the dogs in the royal kennel on my website. And various characters are involved with the kennel one way or another. And my main character is quite a horseman. And he takes a lot of pleasure in not just riding, but training his horses. And they're very comforting to him in difficult times. So both horses and canines figure in the story. And the horses actually, probably more so than the canines, the horses are actually kind of minor characters.
Yeah, that's great. I figured my wife is a big horse person, and I figured you'd have some good horse research in your in your historical novels as well. So that getting those right, I think would be important to people who do know things about horses and any animal in those books as well.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to be able to work details of sort of everyday life like that into because, horses were how you got places
Yes.
600 years ago. So to be able to work those details in a meaningful way into the narrative other than just saying they got on a horse and went somewhere is I enjoy doing that.
Do you have any interesting writing quirks?
Well, I don't know whether this is a quirk or not. A lot of people would say it is because the general advice is get the first draft on the page and worry about editing later. But I edit myself as I go along. I've always been that way, done that. From the time I was in high school writing book reports and term papers, I just my finished first drafts are probably slightly more polished than you might otherwise expect. So
Yeah,
that's
I'm the same way. I write the same. It makes for a trudging process sometimes. Like sometimes you wish you could just let your fingers go and just type, 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 type. But unfortunately, it's like, oh, I need to go back and edit that sentence, or I need to edit this, and then you lose some of your thought. But that's how I write, very similar to you. Like I try to perfect every sentence the first time around, which obviously isn't always the best for just letting it flow.
You know, one of the things I've discovered, though, Reagan, is that by doing that, I'm actually immersing myself in the narrative in some way. And what comes next often comes to me when I'm in the middle of that editing process, because I am a complete pantser. Never for any purpose have I ever been able to write from an outline. It's just something that is not in my DNA. So that living in the story for that polishing and refinement on the first pass is actually a good part of the process for me of getting the story to spin itself out.
Yeah, that I can see that makes sense. So name something that readers wouldn't know about you, that they might find interesting.
I have my private pilot's license.
That is interesting. When's the last time you flew something?
It's been a while. Because when I was actually flying regularly, I discovered that one of the things I liked the most about flying was doing it with somebody. And of course, when you're taking lessons, you've always got your instructor there. And so it was kind of a, besides being a learning experience and something I'd always wanted to do, and a very brain-challenging sort of thing, it was always also a social thing with me. And if you'll, I guess, I should have realized this, but not a lot of people are really comfortable going flying with a newly minted pilot. They want somebody who has a little more experience. So once I had my licenses, I either had to pay for an instructor to go with me or something like that to be able to have the social component of it. And I just kind of
Or
faded.
pay one of your friends. You had to pay one of your friends a big sum to make it worth their risk, huh?
There you go. I didn't try bribery. Maybe I should have.
Like I'll add your spouse or your children to my life insurance policy if you fly with me, and that way if something happens, they're covered.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, I've got our short story section. Got seven rapid questions for you. You ready for these?
Let's give it a whirl.
Favorite movie based on a book?
Dr. Zhivago.
What is your least favorite genre?
Magical realism.
Why? You want to elaborate on that one a little bit? Curious.
It's this weird hybrid between authentically believable and fantasy, and I find myself questioning the plausibility of the fantasy element in it.
Right. You get torn between, like, you'd almost rather it be like either be real or extremely like full fantasy, but not like where it's like real all the way to like one point and you're like, oh, it's got a paranormal element. I didn't know that was going to be coming.
Yeah, exactly. Pick one. There'll be a hybrid.
Right. Favorite city in the United States?
Oh, there's too many. But I guess I'll have to go with San Francisco.
Ooh, we've had a couple of those. Well, a couple of those answers. So that's a good one. I know the weather, obviously. To celebrate your next book's release, which, what is our next book? We are Shadows, I think, is coming up, correct?
It's coming up in about 10, about a week, 10 days, depending on the timing of the airing of this.
Right. So, yep, once we air this, it will be available. So we'll make that clear. Shadows by Pamela Taylor will be out and available. And it's had some good pre-orders on Kindle. I checked earlier. So that's wonderful as well. That means readers obviously are reading the series and they want to continue to read the series. So that's a good thing. So to celebrate that book's release, what do you eat?
Right now I would kill to go to a restaurant and have some really good Mexican food. Because I can't make it at home nearly as well as they do in the restaurants.
So some good Mexican food. What do you drink? Do you have a drink of choice to celebrate a new book release?
Well, if I were having the Mexican food, it would be a nice Mexican beer. If I were doing something else, I'd probably get a bottle of champagne.
All right. Favorite? Do you have a favorite sports team?
I'm not hugely into sports. Now, if you had asked me, do I have a favorite opera, I could have answered that for you.
What is your favorite opera?
With the right singers, the Barber of Seville.
I'm a Phantom of the Opera guy myself.
Oh my God, I love that. Phantom and Les Mis. Oh my God, they're both wonderful.
Last one. If you could write your next book from anywhere in the world, where would it be?
England.
Yeah, I was sitting here thinking when I just asked you that question, I was like, man, she's got to say like England, Scotland, or Ireland. I mean, it's got to be one of those. I was like, it's got to be one of those. It would make it really easy. That's all I got. An opportunity to plug anything or add anything, please feel free to do so.
You know, I'm just really excited what you said about the pre-orders on Shadows. My biggest worry when we started publishing this series was that if people didn't like it, then what about all these other books? But it's been very gratifying to me, and I've really enjoyed some of the feedback I'm seeing in the reviews and other places on people who are reading more than one book of the series and people who are actually getting into it and finding themselves involved with the characters and wanting to know more about what happens to them. That is just like the ultimate gratification for a writer, is for people to want to know more about your characters. And so that is just, that's just really been wonderful. And to that point of what I'm reading in reviews, if you read any of my books and enjoy them, it's always appreciated to see a new review pop up on Amazon or Goodreads or BookBub or wherever you leave your reviews. I'm extremely grateful for that. And unlike some actors who say they never read the reviews from the critics, I do read my reviews, and I do take to heart what readers have to say and what they think about what I'm doing. So I appreciate the time anyone spends to actually leave even 4 or 5 words to tell me what they think about my stories.
That's a wrap for today. Read books, read more books. It'll make you smarter. Probably make you a better human being as well. Make sure you check out our next podcast airing in a few weeks with international USA Today bestselling author Brian Cohen. Brian and I will talk about the importance of a book description and also just the importance of everything that you have on your product pages, all the metadata involved, and how you put those all together and how vital they are in turning someone into being, you know, somewhat interested in your book to actually being a reader and a converter, and they buy your book. So you want to sell more books? Listen to the next podcast. Till then, keep on reading.